Thank you for coming. That's the first thing. If you did not attend the previous session, welcome. And if you did, welcome back, of course. Unfortunately, I have to introduce myself for those who didn't. Yes, so it's going to be very quick and efficient. As you see, my name is Paula, and what I do for a living, it's security, technically penetration tests. And with our team, from the secure team, because this is the name of our company, we are delivering different kinds of projects, mainly, of course, around security, different forensic things, different penetration tests, and that's our background. I'm the boss of this company, however funny it sounds, but we are a team, so it doesn't really matter. But still, I established a company because we all love here security, because it's never... It never stops to be interesting as long as the mistakes are made and as long as obviously the vulnerabilities are to be found. I do have access to the source code of Windows. As I mentioned on the previous session, nothing changed, I hope, in the meantime, because I didn't check the emails. But I don't think something changed. In general, this is something that helps me out to understand Windows internals. And Windows as an operating system, it's really interesting because it has a lot of things that are not very obvious. It's worth to dig in, especially when we are discussing the forensic case or semi-forensic, where the information is, how we are able to get access to it, is there a chance that I can extract this from the memory, and stuff like that. And that's pretty much what we're going to talk about. The inspiration for this session was actually very straightforward. I'm going to mention this in a second, but let's dig in. And again, something to repeat on from the previous session. This guy here, Mark Krasinovich, he wrote a book, Windows Internals. And that book, especially for this session, it's a mandatory position to read 1,500 pages again. But it's not that bad, as long as you plan the reading well. Don't plan that you're gonna read like 60 pages this week, because I mean, we will never remember what was written there. Step by step by step, and then we're gonna get there. This is something that is very important, because it shows us all the different mechanisms that we can have for the operating system. Okay, so let's bring it on. On the previous session, we get the t-shirts with the pasty hash. If you got the t-shirt, that's great. We run out of those. Apparently, everybody likes the raccoon. But what we do, and I need to mention that, with Cornerstone and AdSkills in Sweden, I deliver different kinds of master classes on security. They're not easy, but they are definitely cool. And everybody that has the t-shirt or... If you visit, this is the fresh news that the guys came to tell me, if you visit the Cornerstone booth and you take a picture of yourself next to the raccoon, yes, then basically you got the 20% discounts on all of the classes that are in 2016 that I deliver. So this is something that the guys did. I mean, it's very nice of them. I'm very bad at marketing, but I think it's actually great that they did it this way. And this is the pasty hash idea, is to prevent and start finally mitigating the pasty hash, because it's a big problem in the infrastructure that should be definitely mitigated. Okay, good. So inspiration for the session. Well, very simple. We were working at the customer, and the customer called us, and they were like, oh, you have to come, I mean, with some drama in the voice, and it was literally like this, because what happened is that they had a guy, an administrator, and it was a factory, and this administrator, he was causing a little bit of problems, that it appeared, because he brought the whole infrastructure down. For example, all of the domain controllers that they have, he brought them down, and what happened is that they have lost about 4 million euros in 2.5 days of no operation. That's quite painful. So they call us and they're like, you kind of need your help, yes? And we're like, okay, we kind of gonna come. So what was the thing is that when you got access to all these computers, and then it's great because you are able to investigate all the scenarios. But when we came to this customer, what they said, actually, it's my favorite sentence. Like, okay, we're gonna do the job. Where are the details? Where's the evidence? Seriously? Okay. Apparently, we're going to have a lot of fun here. So where are the details? Where's the evidence? And they said, we have nothing like this. Like, what do you mean? And I'm like, so didn't you do that disk dump? Didn't you do the memory dump? like in order to make sure that we have something to work on. And they're like, no, we have to bring back all the three domain controllers to the operation. And I'm like, yeah, you can operate on one, you know? I mean, where is the other two that we can have a look at? Nothing. Well, the problem persists when we, and in companies, it's a quite oftenly seen situation that we do not have the incident response procedures in place. While this is simply speaking a one page, like one page, when you get nervous, you don't know what to do, I don't know what to do, I get nervous, I'm like, oh my God, yes. Before the presentations on one of the conferences, 50 minutes before the presentation, my SSD crashed. I had a backup, I could recover, but the first thing that I did, I called my team and I'm like, listen, I want you to be with me for that 50 minutes on the phone because I am so nervous right now and I have to do everything that you're going to tell me and I'm going to be telling you what am I doing so we can make it together because I'm so nervous. So this is this incident response procedure in order, obviously, to make us on the safe side, put us on the safe side when we are in trouble. And they didn't have that, and they didn't know what to do. So where's the key thing? First of all, I have to say, the tools, yes, all of the tools that we've got, they are for free. You can use them. I have to mention that this raccoon that is there, I mean, if you got a tool with a raccoon, do not run it in a production environment, because it's going to ruin it. No kidding. You're going to see if you run it in a virtual environment. This stuff is bad. And in our web server, by the way, it's another story. We've got a wall of shame. Whoever clicked on malware, some of the malware actually, with the raccoon icon, copies the full data, the My Documents folder, and it puts it on our web server. Yes? One of the. And we got a wall of shame. We don't delete this. We delete data, but we don't delete the computer names. Just, you know, so that people remember, yes? You're not supposed to click on those in a production environment, yes? Please don't. But the rest is safe, yes? Okay, agenda. Live analysis of the situation of the very beginning, fundamental research, so the basic stuff, system mechanisms, and so on. Okay, what about preserving evidence? Yeah, so this is this basic stuff. How can we preserve the evidence? Well, basically there are two areas where we can preserve the evidence when it's about the box. So this is memory and this is the disk drive. And just to make it easy, yes, to make a memory dump, there are different kinds of tools that you can use. For example, there is a tool, it's called Dump It, written together. In my opinion, one of the best tools that are ever there. I mean, it could not be simpler. You just click on it and then it makes the full memory dump. Could not be simpler, and that's something that you can use for analysis, which we're going to do on this session. Another one, it's the one that is in SysInternals, is the disk to VHD, also super available, super easy. You can map the whole drive and put it somewhere else, and then you can analyze your stuff, yes? So what kind of things we are searching for when we are after, of course, the hack, we kind of feel something happened, yes? Well, we check if we've got some kind of additional accounts. Maybe hacker left an account. Well, hackers, then they don't do that, yes? But maybe they did. And it's always a battle about who is smarter here. You are smarter or hacker thought about this? Or maybe you are, or maybe hacker is, yes? And things like this, it's always a battle. So maybe they made a mistake, maybe. And I can tell you that they often do mistakes because they are not that smart, because they got a different goals. And because your goal is to analyze, you're going to look on every single thing, and they don't, because they are also in a quite nervous situation. So whenever we are thinking about those, what kind of groups, processes running, so this is like super simple. Let me give a chance. We're going to go into advanced stuff. But just to give you one thing, obviously, whenever we are thinking about different kinds of connections, we've got, and let me run this, the CMD, NSLOOKUP minus A and B, yes? What, not NSLOOKUP, sorry. What? Netstat. A and B. Ah, sorry. Of course, that makes sense, because I will be able to see the processes. So netstat minus A and B, and that's something that allows us to see all the different processes and the communication that is related to them. I know you know, yes? Just this tiny B switch, A and B switch or A and O switch, which shows us either process IDs or the process names. If there is something left, some connection left, you're going to see that. But let's say you don't. What else can we check? Well, we can check, and again, starting from the super basics, ipconfig, and we're like, no, she's gonna show ipconfig, this is why am I here, yes, wait a second, yes. DNS, display DNS. And that is something that shows us different kinds of websites in general, or the addresses that we were trying to communicate with. Now, it's a question to you, since it's 6 p.m., who manages this? Who manages my cache? Who affects how long this website's gonna be in the cache, or this address is gonna be in the cache? Who does this? Well, DNS admins, but not our admins. Yes, the other admins over there. So the hacker affects how long that's gonna be in your cache. Because if my domain expires, yes, quickly, the TTL is like super short, and my domain expires, then we will not be able to see stuff here, because it should no longer be in a cache. The reason why we have it in a cache, because it's set to be in a cache like this, yeah? It's an SOA. So that may not be working perfectly here. Okay, so let's see, we did not see anything over there. Where else we can see things? So this is quite interesting, because we can see things, and let me dig in here, Windows 8.1, we can see things in the different kinds of areas in Windows. What are those? Well, at the very beginning, we can list the profiles. And as you see, I got a bunch of profiles available here. By the way, this script is available on my website. Yeah? So you can dig in and you can check and you can download. So right now, don't write it down. Just focus on the information and you can practice the script later by yourself, okay? So just enjoy. So now, question is, obviously these are the folders, so not a big deal. Can I get, the, for example, some list of the profiles from the registry? Sure. But if we compare the number, so we've got here 333, and then we've got five different profiles, and here we've got five folders, we can see that there is more. Okay. Is there a chance that we can display something else? And yes, we've got the profile folders that are stored in the registry, and this is technically a history of all of the profiles that were in Windows. And again, if hacker created the profile, who was smarter? Okay, he could delete the profile, but did he delete it from the registry? So here we go. And as you see, here, we are able to see that there is something additional. Yes, that's from the registry. So again, maybe hacker thought about it. Maybe they deleted it and you will never see anything. Is there anything else we could do? Sure. There is even more caching operating system. Let's dig in into the whole thing. What kind of other things we can see? Well, we can see, for example, the terminal services. So the history of the connection. We don't see anything. This is actually an entry in the registry. I can also list it for all the other users, because it's going to be also stored in the registry. So let's have a look. Can we do that? Sure. And then it shows us that we cannot see pretty much anything because nobody made a terminal connection. Okay, is this something trustworthy? The answer is there isn't. And it isn't, because the remote desktop connections, they actually have a cache. Did you know that? So let's have a look. What I'm going to do, I'm going to run the tool that actually my husband gave me on my names day. My husband is doing the same things as I am. I know it's not really a big sign of a romantism, but that's what he gave me. He doesn't love me that much because it's ugly, yeah? So, but at least it's functional. Okay, he wrote a tool to analyze the cache. So this is really great because I can load the cache and the cache, you can find it on the disk in the AppData, local Microsoft Terminal Server Client cache. Even if profile is deleted, it doesn't matter because you can scratch it out from the drive and then you can find out, obviously, the cache. This bin file, let's see, open, and then decode. It's not the prettiest thing ever, but that's what is cached every single time you use the remote desktop connection. So we could be like, yeah, but that doesn't make sense. Agree, we can change this brick, we can change it. So that depends what we see, we can affect how it looks like. And we've got something like this right now, and it's a question to you, what did the hacker see? What do you think? What is this? Thank you so much. It's an IIS. It's a console of the web server. So we are like, okay, so that's a kind of trace. Yeah, let's stick to it for the moment. If the hacker saw IIS, I can of course read some data, yes? Where does it come from? I mean, which server is this and so on? Maybe this information is going to be displayed there. Maybe I'm going to get some clue. So if the hacker actually could see that, then, well, let's see and let's go to the server, this web server we are talking about, and let's see if there is something malicious on the IIS side. So I'm going to start IIS. Let's do that. Okay. And I'm going to go to the website. And let's see, we've got sites. I got one default website, yes. It is actually stopped, yes. Okay, so nothing really serious. So this is like strange, can I start it? Sure, yes, I can pretty much, well, let me do it this way. I can start it here, no problem, yes. And like, can I browse it? Sure, manage website, browse, yeah. And that's it. So this is whatever, some website, yes. Local website, whatever, yeah. Okay, so nothing really. Like, can I see what is in the, like, inside the folder? Sure, yeah, let's do that. See, inetpub, www.root, and I don't see anything here besides the website that I've got. Yeah, so nothing really special. So this is awkward because sometimes within the whole analysis, the trace ends. But we need to conclude. Because question is, if some web communication has place here, maybe, maybe not, I don't know, maybe I should try monitoring the network, yes? So maybe I should do that, network monitor. I can start it here, or actually maybe let's do it on a client, it's gonna be more interesting. Let's do it on the client. Microsoft Network Monitor. You might be wondering why not Wireshark. Simple case, actually. Within the Microsoft Network Monitor, I'm able to spot the processes by using event tracing for Windows that are responsible for that certain network communication. That's why. Yes? Okay, we can start it here, new capture. We can start it also on the web server here. And then again, new capture. And then we can see how the whole communication looks like. Well, let's see. Start. Okay, so this is the web server right now. Let's do it on the web server side. Okay, and what do we see here? Yes, is there anything interesting that we can spot? Okay, so, well, we can browse. The beauty of that is that we don't know what we search for. We don't know what we don't know about. We are like, any anomaly? Maybe, maybe not. So what I see over here is this TLS communication. Let me enlarge it. That is happening in between 10.10 to 100, which is actually my client, and 10.10 to 10, which is actually this web server. And it's like it happened. Normally communication like this doesn't happen, yes? I can search for some, like, if it's like repeated or not. Yeah, I can like browse, and again, I see this communication there. Obviously, and this is lovely in Windows, and in, well, it's not really Windows' fault, it's a tool's fault, that all of this stuff that you usually look for, they are marked as system, with capital S, obviously. That, who does this? System. It doesn't mean anything, yes? We are like, thanks for saying me this, because I will never guess, yeah? Okay, so now we are like, can I stop the website? Can I stop the web server, yes? Well, let's try it, and let's see if the traffic persists. So I can stop it. So let's stop the IIS. So not right now, the server, it's not running. And let me open the new capture, maybe. It's going to be nicer when we do it this way. No filter, I don't need it. And then we look for this communication. And then what happens is that that traffic actually persists. And now here comes the question. Who responds using the web services on the web server? And this is a typical situation that is used by malware that wants to communicate even with some internal server inside the infrastructure. What is happening, we are leveraging https.sys, not HTTPS, but http.sys, but we don't need to have any web server on the top of it, because web server, it's a software. I need someone who's going to service me the HTTP or HTTPS effectively traffic. And who that is? HTTP.sys. So how can I check the traffic that is related with this body? Well, as simple as this. I go, command prompt, yes, and then I'm going to use the old as world, netsh, and in netsh, you've got the context that is called HTTP, so we're going to use that. This is this context here, HTTP context, and then I'm going to do netsh, HTTP, enter, question mark. We've got an option show, let's do that, show, and then I'm able to use something that is called a service state. Shows a snapshot of the HTTP service. Let's see. So show service state. Lovely. And here, as you can see, I can find all the different process IDs that are related with the web traffic, with the HTTP communication. And we're like, yeah, but we just stopped the web server. Who cares? The WinRM, so the remote management, it also leverages web services underneath. So you are, your servers are kind of like web servers all the time. So how can we spot which processes are those? Well, one of the things that we can see here, and this is really nice, let me enlarge it, is that here, for example, we can see that we've got the, on the port 5985, this is the remote management, yes? 56, it's the secure connection. This is normal. We can also find any other services that are running here. For example, I get a website that it's called pricing. I have no idea what's this. Can we see it? Does it work? Sure, let's see. So we're going to take this, and this is the HTTPS localhost pricing. There's a problem with a security certificate. Okay, continue to this website. We've got some website. So this is weird. This is actually something that encrypts the tunnel that we call a covered channel. I mean, it's a theory, we don't have to pay attention to this, but just saying that communication can be encrypted by using different kinds of means, yes? That's one of those. Now, who is responsible for that? Because I want to know. So we've got here process IDs, 956 and also 9566, 956, 2836, this one. So can we check? Sure, let's see. I'm going to use for that process hacker. I could use process explorer. Why not process hacker? Let's use this. Effectively for that, there is no difference. And I'm going to sort by the process ID. It's actually already sorted. And I can check for the 956. And 956, it's this one, is SVC host. Lovely. SVC host can run so many things, but process hacker can tell me, for example, which services are related to it. And I got the cryptographic services, DNS clients, one. Everything is legit, including, because we search for web services, and this is this WinRM that I was talking about. So that's fine. What about the other guy? So we've got 2836. Let's see. 2836. Okay, run DLL. This is a sign of something that I called, or in our team we call it, a bad development. What is really funny is I'm going to show you my personal laptop, run DLL, it's also there. And I really don't wish to have this. When I look at this, I'm like, what kind of, like, I mean, this is from the medieval time. Developers in the medieval time were doing this, yes? Where does the process come from? Lenovo. Because it's a power management, yes, for my laptop. Yes, it's the management that you download from the Lenovo website. Lovely, right? But anyway, that's why we are kind of used to this run DLLs. But effectively, we can go to properties, and we can see what kind of DLL is launched here with what kind of export. And I name it this way so that you can see. But it can be anything. Now, a big question of the universe is what this is doing. Do we know how to check? Yes, and I'm going to show you, because it's a way of checking and digging into your DLLs and decompiling them. You don't have to be a developer to do that, yes? And then finding out, like, I don't know this DLL, I want to see, like, what is it? And anything that stinks, you're like, okay, this is malicious, we don't want that. Because in security, there is one word, one sentence, If it does not smell right, it's not right. Yes, and if you don't like what you see, just get rid of that. So, and if you don't know, then definitely get rid of that. So let's dig in. So this is on the server side. What about on the client side? Well, sniffing will show us the same story. Yeah? So this communication obviously happens. Joe Biden will not run for the president in 2016. Okay, good to know. Okay, so we've got, let's dig in. And we've got, of course, we can spot this TLS sessions, and I spotted it, I selected two events, it's there. Okay, so like we can stop that, it doesn't really matter. Now, do you want to save? No. Now, question to ourselves is there a way I'm able to check who communicates with who? Because by processes, they not necessarily will tell you, because I can have a DLL that is inside SVC host, and how can you tell? Yes? So, well, device guard in Windows 10 will actually prevent us from that, but long story. But on that particular analysis, we can check it in the geeky way. And the geeky way is going to be to use the Microsoft's sexiest tool, which is called XPerf. And I mean, seriously, if there is the most difficult tool that I can imagine is this, because it leverages Windows internals that, of course, need to come to place. But I want to tell you something more, that if you're going to learn how to use this tool efficiently in your infrastructure, you're going to be the master of masters in troubleshooting. This is great. We solve our customers' problems with XPerf and the whole analysis, of course, because it's not XPerf that only does this. XPerf collects the trace. Let's do it then. What I'm going to do, I'm going to use XPerf, and I'm going to turn on the session, and I'm going to turn it on with the following flags. Prots underscore thread, that's the name of the flag, and I'm going to specify also plus loader, because I want to see the image that are loading during my trace, and then network trace. Yes, let's do it this way. I could make it pretty. For example, we could specify the buffer size, the max file size, the file being circular and not really expanding and stuff like this. But this is more than enough. And pretty much that's it. Yeah, so we are able to run it. Let's start a trace. This is something that I called, don't get me wrong, it's my perspective, it's a tool that was written by Scandinavians. Because it doesn't really tell you much at the end. Yes? It's like, okay, that works very good. Everybody's so calm and so on, yes? But it works very well. So let's move forward. XPerf, we're going to stop the trace. And in order to stop the trace, you have to do stop. And then you have to specify the output, which in our case, let's say trace ETL, event trace log, enter. Lovely. So that's going to stop it. It's going to take a small moment. Here we go. We've got the trace ETL. And now the next thing is that because ETL itself it's awful. I mean, well, it's not awful if it contains what we want it to contain. But this trace, ETL, it's not very rich. It's better to convert it to Notepad, to text file, and open it in Notepad, because it's going to give us a little bit more structured information. I don't need any flows and so on. I just need this information. What communicates with what on my system? I want to know that. Full list of processes now. So let's dig in. XPerf. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to convert it, and I'm going to specify minus I, so the import trace ETL, and then we're going to do minus O, which is trace output txt, and then I'm going to do minus a, which is action. An action is called dumper. There are many different actions. That means that from this ETL, I'm going to just spit it out to the text file. But if you want to extract some other information about, for example, only the process list, you're going to use another action. And if you search on MSDN, XPerf actions, you're going to find a list of the actions that you can use in order to work on a trace. I mean, this is just 1/100th of things that XPerf can do. Okay, let's do it. That was quick. And now we will do a simple thing. Find str capital I in order to like ignore case sensitivity. And then we're going to specify TCP sent because I need, because I know, and here comes the knowledge, because I know that this is the name of the flag that is used in operating system when things are being sent over the network. Okay, let's dig in. What else we've got? And then we need to specify, of course, the trace txt. Yes, show me all of those things. Lovely. So I got the list of the processes. Yes, for example, run DLL that we were talking about. And I got 1504 process ID. Who was communicating with what? Yes, I got here, it's like a little bit banded, but we've got 10.10.2.10 with 10.10.2.100. Yes, everything is there. Yes, and please don't complain that event lock, I mean, you can complain, event lock, event viewer. Ooh, like, xperf, mm-hmm. This gives you information, yes? All the other tools that are written in the world, they rely on ETW, even tracing for Windows. Why these tools work? Because Windows allows it. Because the ETW allows it, yes? We can make a cool information gathering solutions based on the ETW. That's what all of the tools that you technically pay for, that's what they do. They just put on that a nice GUI, because it's not easy, that's why. But if you know xperf, perfect. Okay, so now we know that there is another run DLL. Okay, let's dig in deeper. And then I'm gonna show you a cool stuff. Because in run DLL, I kind of found it here. We can go to the properties again, same story. And then we see that, so there's another part of it. Another DLL, malware client DLL, run client. So there's this communication in between these two, yes? Now, and again, I want to see what's there. I'm going to show you something. I can see that this DLL, it's actually in C Windows. Yeah, and it's a 32-bit DLL because it was launched by Sys Windows on Windows 64, run the DLL32.exe for the 32-bit DLLs. Okay, so Windows contains that. Great, so what I can do, let's go here, and I'm going to do copy C Windows malware client DLL, and I'm going to copy this to the C analysis folder because I prepared it for that. Yeah, so let's go to C analysis. We've got this DLL copied. Now, I want to know what is in this DLL. So, being a bit determined, I'm going to launch the tool. Is this a good tool or not? It's good. Every developer has its own decompiler. I like the IlSpy, actually, because it's quite simple. I'm not a developer, maybe that's why. But for IT pros, it's more than enough, yes? So, IlSpy is free. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to load this DLL. So C analysis malware client. And then it shows us that the file doesn't contain a managed assembly. Managed assembly means it's not a .NET code. So maybe it's like C code. I don't know, C++. I have no idea. Is there a chance I can see that? Sure. There is a tool, again, not here, but here. That tool is called Resource Hacker. And I can use that tool, and I can find out if there is, well, anything interesting that I can get. Also, I can launch the tool, the DLL, into the PE browser, so anything that will display you the PE, because you will be able to see if there is any chance for the .NET DLLs to be loaded. And if they are, it means it contains some kind of a .NET code. And that's a little bit easier. Okay, let's have a look. Resource Hacker file, open. Let's take this DLL. It was in C analysis. We got it. Open. So there is this binary part. 105, whatever. 1045. Okay, and here comes the interesting part. What is the MZ? What is it? What is this? Executable. Thank you. Do you know what the MZ stands for? That's kind of cool. Yeah, I don't have any Polish sausage that I could share with you. But this actually stands for Marek Bikowski, which is the Polish guy that invented EXE. Yeah? So if you ever wonder, like, what is this? Because everybody's like, executable. Yeah, sure. But why? I mean, if you want to be famous, like, he made this tiny... He did a lot of things, but we don't really hear about them. But this, I mean, he made himself famous for a long time, yeah? So this is the way. Okay, but regardless, can I do some actions on that? Sure, I can take it and I can save a resource, like binary resource or as a binary file and so on. So I can do that and I can save this resource here. Yeah, so binary, yes, and I can do that. Now question is, can I get into this file? Sure, so let me display all files. We've got this binary resource that I've saved here. So it saves it as binary RC, and then additionally it exports the binary resource. So I got it, open, decompiling, and we got a piece of code. Yes? And then we can analyze it. I mean, forgive me, we could jump into it, that's fine, because we can do it, but it's going to be boring. Yes, we got a little bit more interesting stuff to do, but the thing that I want to say and show you is that we are able to analyze, oh, actually, let me go to this methods here, this one. We are able to analyze step by step what is happening in this code. For example, the fact that the communication was repeated, it's because we've got a timer here that we actually launch every 10 seconds, yes, as we analyze later, and so on and so on. We could be like, yeah, but the code can be obfuscated. Exactly. Yeah, that's this moment when you A, know how to analyze it, and if the code is obfuscated, excuse me, but it's probably something that is not trusted. And then we can get rid of it, not really wonder, like, what is this for? So this is the situation. Okay, now, whenever we are thinking about this whole analysis, yes, is there anything interesting that we could still move on to? Yeah, so this was the basic terrain orientation. The typical traces, yes, where we can find this information, where we can find the stuff, well, in the different kinds of logs. Logs can be cleaned, though. What about logs being cleaned? Yes, can we get those logs from somewhere? Sure, I will show you from where. What about things like prefetch? This is actually cool. From what is mentioned here, prefetch, it's the only thing that is not profile-oriented. So if you've got many users, prefetch is only one. Customer calls us and he's like, help us, yes? And literally, I know this guy, he's a friend of us, so he kind of, like, he's very dramatic. And I'm like, okay, so what is happening? And he is like, do you know Veronique? And I'm like, sure. And to be sincere, I mean, this is what I will tell you. I know Veronique, and Veronique, it's a lady that is very socializing. She's great, but she's too social for me. And from the security perspective, she literally clicks on everything that moves. If it moves, she's gonna click on that, yes? So, and they're like, yeah, so Veronique, I mean, she clicked on something and we got a crypto locker. And she didn't tell anyone, she brushed under the carpet. Next day in the morning, the whole file server got encrypted. Yes. And I'm like, okay, what can we do for you? And they're like, yeah, so help us. I'm like, yeah, how? Like recover from backup, for example. And they're like, that's the problem. But at least help us to find out what happened. I'm like, okay, so let's have a look at prefetch. Because prefetch, regardless who Veronique is, can show us the history of what was executing in this operating system. This is truly awesome. So let's dig in. First of all, we have to check if the prefetch is enabled. Be careful, because for the SSD drives, prefetch is actually disabled. One of the things that I think everybody should do is to enable prefetch. But don't get me wrong, sometimes when you read these tips, you go to these forums, admin forums, sometimes I read them, and you've got these tips and tricks how to make your disk to be, how to have a little bit more free space available. And one of the things that people suggest is to delete prefetch. What? So you have just saved like 10 megabytes, by the way. Prefetch, it's not huge. Prefetch is actually great, because what it contains is the history of the things that executed. Let me show you this. 3 means enabled. Now, if it contains files, so this is just dir, nothing special, but what these files are, these PF files here are the ones that contain the executable names. For example, XPerf that I was running on this computer, yes? Today is the 21st of October, 9 a.m. now it's 9:39 a.m. I've run prefetch. You see, I've run xperf. You see it in prefetch. But what about the things from the past? Can I analyze the whole history? Sure, and that's this cool thing that I want to show you. Because to see things like this, it's not a big deal. Everybody can do deer, but there's actually a tool. This name of the tool, it's called PF64. It's the tool from the tzworks.org website. There's a guy, and don't get me wrong, I'm not advertising it. It's just the only tool that makes sense until we write our own. And this is a tool that costs money. I think it's something about $100. So if you're going to be in the need of that, just to show you, we are able to analyze different kinds of prefetch files. For example, I'm analyzing the prefetch that is called Mimikatz, and I check when, have a look, and how many times Mimikatz on this computer was executed. The whole history, you don't have to do anything. And you've got different kinds of DLLs, so slash modules, loaded during the execution time. It's amazing. Yes, Cryptolocker, obviously it may have chance if we don't have the code execution prevention implemented, but at least you're gonna know. And when you've got Sysmon on the top of that, this is even better, because you're gonna see who launched this. Is there any other executable that launched this? Or you can guess from the history here. Both options are fine. Now, whenever we are thinking, of course, about the other stuff and the other traces that we can get, we can, for example, check the event logs. But what if someone deleted event logs, where there is still a chance that these event logs might be in the memory? And by the way, the story with the admin that sabotaged the infrastructure, that's how we found the information what he was doing. He has his laptop turned on. We sneaked in the night, literally, it was cool. We sneaked in the night, and then I managed to grab his password. Long story, pasty hash and a couple of other things, memory dumps, and he was reusing the same password in a couple of places. So he wasn't perfect, nobody is, but he made those mistakes, so I leveraged them. We logged onto his desktop, and then we made a memory dump. If he had FireWire port enabled, we'll be able to do this using FireWire without a logon. But he didn't. So we had to figure out the way how we are able to log on. And then I made a memory dump, and then we were able to extract that information from the dump. Okay, lovely. So how to analyze memory and how to extract information from the dump file. Now, here comes the big question of the universe. Let me show you something. What is the name of the service, or in technically, who manages EVTX files? And event logs, yes, let me show you this. Well, let's use the, I'm not a fan of Task Manager. The first thing I did when I got the access to the source code of Windows, by the way, is that I checked the Task Manager source code and the ping. And it's not a secret, but they are both super professional. Ping, if you do minus T, it doesn't run forever, but for 99 years. That's why it shouldn't be used, you know, because there is a lot of problems inside. Though it's nice to, you know, for tiny little things. The same for Task Manager. For tiny little things, it's great. Okay, so what I want to show you. We've got a services, and the service that I'm looking for, it's the event log. So pretty much the service that we got is the Windows event log. And it runs in the on the process ID 428. This is just a local analysis to show you. 428. Now, great. Well, 428, yes, that's the one, is the one that we can go to details, PID 428, it's the SVC host. But what exactly in this SVC host is this? Well, technically, let me run the process hacker right now. And I want to show you, we've got it sorted by the process ID, 428, yes? We can go to the properties and services, and then we see what kind of services are there. Yes, so we've got an event log, for example. When we go to threats, yes, we've got, of course, here different kinds of services analyzed here as well. What I want to show you, though, is that in threads, we can see the service and the start address, it doesn't matter, it's a DLL, WEVTSVC. The reason why I'm showing you this, because it's going to be our trace, and that's cool. How are we going to do it? Well, simple. Let's use this WEVTSVC as a trace. Now, I made a memory dump, as I said, and I got them here, so scripts, and I'm going to use to analyze the whole thing, a volatility. Volatility, it's a Python script that, well, it's used to analyze the memory. Is it professional? Because it's community, blah, 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 free. Yes, it, could it be better? It could, but it's the best what we've got. Small advice for the setup. If you are like Python on Windows, this is nothing nice. Well, it can be nice. If I actually use, as you've noticed, maybe version 2.7. Because version 2.7, it's not the newest, but it's the most compatible with all the different community-written scripts. So 2.7, 32-bit. Not 64, I got a 64-bit operating system, but 32-bit, because it serves and it supports more scripts. So it could be like, yes, what else? It's like almost like setting up Java, yes, with these millions of versions, because this application needs this and this application needs that. Kind of. But it's not that bad. Volatility. I'm going to use the file that I've got here on the C drive in tools dumps, okay. I got the analyze dump. And what is the next thing? I'm going to use the profile. And my profile here, it is actually Windows 7 and SP1. And this is the 64-bit operating system. Yes, very good. Now, what I'm going to do, I'm going to specify that I would like to list the DLLs. And for that, it is the DLL list module inside. And I would like to export that into list.txt. Whatever, let's keep it this way. It's going to be a short run. And this list.txt is going to contain all the DLLs. What am I doing right now? I'm searching for SVC host process ID that hosts the event log service. Why? Demo is coming. I'm searching for that because if I find, well, this body here, I can display the handles here. And if you see if the event logs are in a memory, and they are under, we can list them by querying the handles. Give me everything from the memory that is from this address to this address, from this handle over there. Yes? Great. So we kind of do it like this, but that's the only way how we can use. Yes? So I'm going to export the EVTX, so the log files, from the handles of the SVC host that hosts the Windows event log. Easy, right? At the end, not too bad. So let's see what is in this list. Okay. So we've got, well, the DLLs loaded in many different processes. What am I searching for right now? I'm searching for the DLL. That's going to point me to the process. Control F, yes, WEVT, show me the body. Not this one, this one. That Windows Event SVC DLL, it's hosted by SVC host process ID 848. Great, we are almost home. Have a look. So we will do this, and again, volatility, the same story, because I want to export the handles. What is under handles to the process equals EVTX files. Are you with me? Whoa. You're like, okay. let's slow down, yes? Small explanation here. So at that certain level, there is a module. It's called dump files. Easy, yeah? And we're going to dump those files, N option and minus P options. Yeah, I want to have every frame from the handles from the process ID 848, yes? So this is the one that we had in here. Yeah, so this was this 848 that we had, 848 that we got somewhere here. Yeah, so this is this SVC host with the certain process ID. Lovely. And then what we're going to do, be careful, it's case sensitive, we're going to export them into the path. And this path technically is here. It's my another console into this path where I'm going to analyze the result in a moment. This is what I'm going to use right now. It's our tool. And we wrote it because there was no tool in the world like this in order to extract the EVTX files from the memory. EVT, no problem, but EVTX, it's a very difficult format. It has a lot of internal signatures inside. To change it, not really, yes? The files has a problems of being consistent. When it's not changed, it's great. When you try to do something about it, it loses the whole logic because the signatures, they stop matching. So we've got this one, and then we've got a folder, it's called in, yes? And that's it. So let's do it. Let's export all those files there. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a small moment again, but we are close, we are close. And all these things, oh, lovely, I like to see that, EVTX, so they are exported. In the meantime, in the other console, I can go to in, and dear, this is the list of things that are exported. Yeah. So we've got all of them that are exported right now, but the problem with those files is that they've got a names like VACB. What is this? Is this a valid file? Well, the problem is that it isn't. It's not a valid EVTX. Just to show you that, we can find something. Like, for example, something nice. Maybe we can try application lock or security lock. It's quite challenging. Let's see. So this file, it's actually the whole name file, EVTX VACB. Can I launch it? Yeah, well, let's try, of course. So we're going to do rename and this file here, and we're going to rename it, paste to the same one, but EVTX, yes? And then I want to have that file. Let's launch it in the event lock, enter, yes? Okay, sorry, the event lock file is corrupted. Okay, that's quite sad. Is there a chance we can fix it? I'm going to delete it. Sure, yes, okay. Yes, definitely. So we wrote a tool, as I mentioned. It's called EVTX Recovery. It's available on my website, so you can download it from there. And then the logic is our developer, Michael, he's very antisocial. Let me put it very delicately. He doesn't want to talk to people. When we arranged the team dinner, literally, he called me, he's like, are you serious you want me there? Are you serious? I'm like, yes, Michael, you are part of our team. Yeah, you work here. I mean, yes, of course. I mean, how else? He's like, yeah, because you know, the problem is that I have nothing interesting to say and I have nothing to put on myself. Like, all my clothes are not nice. And Michael said this. I was like, what are you talking about? And he's like, and you guys have the common subjects and I have nothing interesting to add. I'm like, what? He's quite special, believe me. And the logic sometimes, because he is author of vast majority of our tools, the logic that he puts there, it's not sometimes very logical, but this is quite logical. EVTX recovery.exe, in, out, out. Yeah. Sure, of course. And in the out folder, let me copy this. In the out folder, pretty much, this is something that, let me show you, out, dear, we've got nothing right now, but I'm gonna convert or try to save all those log files, and let's see, of course, if we'll be able to find them. Yes. So this is the whole thing. So we found these records. Yes. And what I want to have at that certain level is that let me bring it up here. Yes. Very good. I'm gonna launch the log file that we had before. So this is this file, something something EVTX, and it's actually named EV, let me tab it maybe. Where is this? Should we have it or it wasn't, it could be that it wasn't recovered, could be the case. Let me see. So dear application, I'm gonna do it this way. Sure, it's in out folder. Sure, okay. That's better. Mm-hmm. Ah, that's better. Okay, so it was actually there. Lovely. Hopefully everything's going to be okay, because, I mean, to be sincere, I don't know. And then, let's see, it tries to open it, and we managed to open something like that. Yes? It's poor, I know, because that is what was in the log, what was in the file, but we managed to extracted. And for the other logs, security log and so on, it's going to be the same story. This is quite hard, so to say, to write a tool like this. But as you see, tool is available and we can use it. Now, very good. The next subject that I've got for you, by the way, do you have any questions? No? Okay. I'll be here after the session, okay? So then you can come in and then we can talk. But the last thing that I wanted to show you is actually quite cool, and that has the reflection to what I did in the past session, but it's not out of context. No, no, no. It actually has the context. Let me present it. So what we did on my last session, and I promise that we're going to do it on this session because it kind of closes the subject, was the situation where Freddy, it is the account, it's in the domain, he saved a password in his browser. I mean, normal stuff. Browser asks us, do you want to save a password over there, and so on. And what I've proven on the previous session is that when you save the passwords like this, they are secure. Of course, as long as someone does not steal our password. And what I did, I have changed cached credentials, I have overwritten cached credentials of Freddy, and I logged on with the cached password that, I mean, I set it up to prove you that if I don't know the password of the account, your secrets are safe. Are they? Let's continue. Yes? So, beautiful forensic approach, cause. In the domain controller, which is, let me open the window, it is here. Very good. Let me start the console. There is a tiny little certificate that is actually, very good, let me enter the tool, that is actually in the memory. I'm going to start Mimikatz, and again, it's our edition, not recognized by antivirus. There is a certificate that nobody really knows about. It's not, you cannot spot it easily on the disk. It's not in your profile, not in computer account, not in services, nowhere. But can we extract it from the memory? Sure, we found something like this. Let me show you, because it's actually quite on the edge of violating someone's privacy. Privilege debug, I need to have it. And now what I'm going to do, LSA dump and backup keys, export. And that, lovely, exports me the certificates, as you see, the PFX files, into into the parent folder. And as you see, I got a little bit more. What is this thing about? Where can I open the certificate? Sure, I'm going to open the DER file, because it's the one that does not request me to install it because of the private key, just for a short demonstration. And you're going to see how this certificate looks like. It's going to take a small moment until it opens it, and then you're going to see. It is actually quite mysterious, because it looks like this. It was issued to, we prefer not to talk. And I'm really, you're going to get my irony in a moment. Issued by, we prefer not to talk to. It's not trusted. Weird. Like, it's valid only for 1 year. My domain controller, it's from 2012. I use it for my labs and so on. It's only valid for 1 year. Why? Nobody knows. Okay. Is there a chance I could leverage this? Sure. So what I did, I took this, because it's always the same, I took this PFX file. Yeah, so there is a PFX extension. And I took this file, as you see, this is this one, and I moved it before the session, it's the same file, to this machine here. It's a Windows 10 client. Don't get me wrong, I'm not leveraging insecurity of the system. I'm just wondering why this key is there. That's it. And I have no answer, by the way. What I'm going to do? Well, since I'm logged on as Freddy, I don't have to start the console as administrator, because I don't have to be administrator to modify the files in my profile. So what is the thing? Well, in the CQ tools, let me see, in the disk tools, I got this file. This is this PFX. And what I've got here, I got also here another tool that I'm going to use, CQ Hashcalc and Master Key AD. Both tools, especially these ones, they are available on the website. We wrote them. Yes, because it's a quite an advanced scenario when it's a, by the way, as far as I know, I don't want to say it, but maybe, as far as I know, we are the only people in the world and the first ones they discover that. So this is pretty nice because it's kind of huge. Let's dig in, and it's going to be very short. So master key AD that I'm going to use, it has three options: file, PFX, and new hash. It's written by our developer, Michael. It's a typical Grzegorzewski, it's a typical Polish surname. Try to say that. Okay, not too bad. File, and as a file, I need to specify the users, something that in our team we call a key container. And in key containers, they are in AppData, Roaming, Microsoft Protect, in the folder, and you've got those. Those things encrypt the keys. Which keys? These keys in Microsoft Crypto, RSA, your SID, these keys here. These keys here encrypt your passwords that you save through browsers to Facebook. Okay, let's dig in. So what I'm gonna do in Protect, I'm gonna take this container because I want to decrypt it with my current password that I set during the cache credentials process. So I'm gonna take this body, useful stuff. I know it's easy, but shift, right click, copy as path. And then I put it here, I got it. So this is this file. And then I need to specify the PFX, and PFX, it's in the same folder, so I just tapped it. And then new hash, and I don't know what to put there, so I have to calculate it. Let me start a new console. Mm-hmm. And this is in CQ tools. And I got here CQ hash calc. CQ hash calc, actually. This is the one. And it takes two parameters, password and user. Let's do it. So password was Mimikatz, because I have overwritten it in the registry for the cache credentials. That's why I know it. I don't know the original password of the user. I don't care. And now, user, F. Krueger. And I got here this empty hash, which is, as we discussed, MD4, and that's what is used in Windows. And new hash, and I put it here, and I'm done. What this does, it generates me, in here, a new file. You're going to see that in a moment. Enter. Lovely. And I need to set up into this new file an attribute that it should be system and hidden. But before I do it, there is a new file, as you see, that came. It's this AD modified. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to take the original file, rename it to .old, because I don't need it anymore, and this A modified, and we're almost done. We bring it up like this, enter, we want to change it, lovely. And now in the console, I need to set up the attributes. Enter. Now, have a look. Let's go to this Google Chrome tool. When we could not see the password, remember? Now I'm going to refresh it. And all your secrets or your bases are belong to us. Yeah? This is quite huge, yes? Because we could be like, but what if our domain admin switches to the bad side? Yes. These guys can ruin all the privacy. Like, seriously, get your old Facebook passwords. We could be like, yeah, they have them anyway. Not necessarily, that's my point. Because data protection API relies on your password. If they do have your password, then they do. If they don't, then that's the way. Yeah? Okay, so let's move along. The fooling auditor, of course, that's the situation. We are able to, obviously, delete the logs, erase the logs, and so on. We have to be ready for that. EVTXs are quite good. We wrote a tool, as I mentioned, to modify EVTX, but it took us over 6 months to do it. So it's not really the case. Probably nobody's going to spend the time to write a tool like this, though it is possible. We are able to modify the metadata of the files, and this is actually quite simple. Not to make it longer, but what I put on the website, it is actually the script where it's a simple thing. You are able It's a PowerShell. It's not even a script. It's nothing serious. It's the PowerShell where you are able to modify the last access time, last write time, and creation time, because all those things are to be changed. So when we search for malware, it's the biggest mistake. It could work, but it couldn't as well, to search for the files that were recently changed. I can change that, no problem, and you will never see. My malware is going to show up as it was from 2000, not 2015. Yes? Play with that, because it's really nice. Cheating on metadata is one of the cases. And underneath, we are able, obviously, to get information about the what happened in the NTFS journal. Yes? Okay. At the very, very end, when we are thinking about different CSI techniques, yes, we can obviously join files, we can hide them, we can hide data in pictures, we all know that, alternate data streams. So all these things that we know, that can also happen. Watch that. There are different forensic tools that you can use in order to get access to the data like this. So alternate data streams, it's one of the cases. Okay, one last thing to dig in, of course. Be careful, of course, whenever we are doing this kind of analysis, because it's a cat and mouse game, yes? You're going to fall, someone's going to fall, you're going to fall, someone's going to fall, someone is smarter, you are smarter, someone is smarter, you're smarter. So it's always about that. But the one thing is for sure, make sure that you're going to preserve the evidence well, because if you will not be the person that does the analysis, which might be the case, which may not be, the evidence needs to be preserved well, because that's the only way that we've got after the attack. After a machine gets attacked, make the disk dump, make the memory dump, disconnect machine from the network, it's one of the techniques, but the technique that you can read about in the articles that a lot of people say, it's shut down the machine. Please don't do that. Because what it does, it wipes the memory. And in the memory, we've got the juiciest information that we could ever had. Yes? Yes, the juiciest. Definitely the juiciest, because there are also people's passwords, yes? And Windows 10 does not prevent you from that as long as you don't have the version Enterprise with the secure boot enabled, credential guard implemented, BIOS, we've got a UFI and it's enabled there, TPM must be there, yeah, okay, great. Yes, but who has this? Do you have Windows 10 implemented? Nah. Maybe you do, okay, great. Maybe you don't. But that's something that will definitely not prevent us. We have to play with the code execution prevention. At the very end, yes, in order obviously to keep the data safe and to not even to get to this point, code execution prevention, evidence preserving, that's something that is quite important. Make yourself a procedure, the incident response procedure, the list where you're gonna, it's gonna be written step by step, like kind of dump. What do you need to do in case of emergency? Because we get nervous and we do stupid things without intentions, yes? And that's something that I would like to have as a summary of the session, yes? This kind of document, it does not cost as much, but if I could ask you to prepare something like that for yourself, it will be great, because we'll be able, or you will be able, to analyze data later on efficiently. And as you see, CSI Windows, or this forensics investigation, is endless, because data can be everywhere hidden, but it's very important to like it, and eventually get the evidence that you can touch and you can extract some information from. Yep, so this is the case. Hopefully it was interesting. Thank you for staying a little bit longer. Hope it was worth it, your time. And now it's time to get some drinks. I'm staying on purpose tonight because I was supposed to fly out, but they're like, oh, they're going to be a party. I'm like, yes. So hopefully see you there. Yes, and thank you so much.